Today is Friday, December the 12th, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. Australia's social media ban sets global precedent for online censorship. By Oscar Grenfell. A ban on Australian children under 16 accessing social media came into effect on Wednesday, setting a global precedent for state control of the internet amid rising hostility to inequality, authoritarianism, and war. Social media platforms have been compelled under threat of massive fines to institute age verification measures and remove children. Potentially all users, including adults, now face new obligations to remain on platforms, such as providing government identification or photographs to the conglomerates. The measure has sparked mass opposition, including from young people, already finding ways to circumvent it. This is not merely an Australian issue. The Trump administration has introduced a nearly identical policy to the US Congress, and a host of European powers are moving towards a similar ban. Legislation was rushed through Parliament by the Labor government last year, supposedly to protect young people from online harm, particularly to mental health. Those claims are false. Mental health advocacy groups overwhelmingly opposed the ban, warning it will likely intensify children's psychological problems. The Labor government is implementing a program that can only worsen the mental health crisis. It has done nothing to address the fact that 1 in 6 children live below the poverty line, instead imposing the burden of the cost of living crisis on working class households and inflicting austerity on vital social services. These social conditions, and the reality that capitalism offers them no future, are fueling a radicalisation of young people. The real aim of the ban is to suppress that sentiment and prevent it from finding organised political expression. The ban is being imposed after long-developing social anger erupted to the surface amid the Gaza genocide, which has politicised an entire generation. In Australia, masses of youth participated in often weekly demonstrations, held school strikes, and engaged in other actions to oppose the war crimes they were witnessing through social media. The footage of maimed Palestinians, bombed hospitals, and decimated schools showed a reality completely at odds with the lies of the major imperialist powers, including Australia, which backed the slaughter. It is such exposures of government lies and criminality that the ban seeks to prevent. The mass opposition to the genocide followed outpourings over the climate crisis, including school strikes in Australia and globally, involving hundreds of thousands. Anger over these manifestations of capitalist crisis is increasingly cohering into an attraction to socialism. The most recent polling on the issue in Australia found last year that 53% of young Australians wanted more socialism, mirroring similar results in the US and Europe. Government leaders have covered over their political motivations when publicly justifying the ban. Instead, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has trotted out conservative tropes about the need to return to an idyllic past when children played outdoors. But the underlying agenda has been expressed in other contexts. In a November address, Mike Burgess, head of the domestic spy agency ASIO, warned of growing revolutionary extremism associated with hostility to the Gaza genocide and left-wing opposition. Beyond the immediate issue of cracking down on oppositional sentiments among young people, government leaders have long railed against the ability of ordinary people to make political statements online with relative anonymity. Albanese has denounced keyboard warriors who can anonymously say anything at all without any fear. In that context, the government's claims that it will not access the identification details collected by the social media companies hold no water. Just as growing social anger is international in character, so too are the imperialist powers coordinating in their attempt to suppress it. In December 2024, just days after legislation for the social media ban was passed, the Five Eyes spying network released a report warning against youth radicalisation. Five Eyes is led by the US and composed of the UK, Canada, Australia and New Zealand. The report warned that young people have grown up online and are technologically savvy. They were using such platforms to view and distribute violent extremist content, which further radicalises themselves and others. This threat had to be combated with a whole-of-society effort. It is clear that the under-16s social media ban is part of that effort, underscored by the fact that the Trump administration and European countries are moving to implement similar measures. In that context, the warnings of violent extremism are a transparent fraud. Trump is seeking to erect a fascistic dictatorship, overturn the Constitution, including through the mobilisation of far-right and even Nazi forces. To the extent that the social media companies amplify anti-immigrant and racist content that is one component of a broader promotion of fascism by the political and media establishment, the connection is exemplified by ex-Twitter, increasingly transformed by the world's richest man, Elon Musk, a former member of the Trump administration, into a loudhailer for far-right propaganda. The assault on online freedom is part of a broader offensive against left-wing opposition. That includes this week's memorandum by US Attorney General Pam Bondi, classifying as domestic terrorists those who promote opposition to law and immigration enforcement, extreme views in favour of mass migration and open borders, or anti-capitalism. The crackdown on democratic rights involves not only openly fascistic forces such as Trump, but the entire political establishment, expressed in the fact that it is a Labour government that is setting a global precedent for censorship. That precedent builds on long-standing attempts by governments to gain control of the internet, which is viewed as a revolutionary threat because it provides those outside the corridors of power with the ability to disseminate their views, communicate and organise opposition. A key turning point came in 2017, when Google, acting at the behest of government agencies, introduced a new algorithm, suppressing the World Socialist website and other alternative outlets in search results, instead prioritising corporate publications. The crisis of capitalism is far deeper than when those measures were instituted. The major powers, led by the US, are responding with imperialist war, including not only such crimes as the genocide in Gaza, but also confrontations with Russia and China that threaten nuclear world war. Domestically, they are enforcing social inequality unseen since the days of the French Revolution, through dictatorial measures. There is widespread hostility and growing resistance that has found expression in large numbers of young people denouncing Australia's social media ban and defiantly circumventing it. Protests, school strikes and other actions must be organised. An alternative political perspective is required. The capitalist program of censorship and ultimately dictatorship can only be fought through a mass movement of the working class, independent of the entire political establishment. The fight for online freedom and democratic discussion poses nothing less than the dismantling of the repressive capitalist state apparatus and the placement of all the major productive forces of society, including the technology corporations, under the democratic control and ownership of the working class. White House plans oil blockade of Venezuela in drive for regime change. By Andre Damon. Following the US seizure of an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela on Wednesday, the Trump administration has pledged to further escalate its campaign of piracy against the government of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Reuters reported Thursday that the administration is preparing to seize more oil tankers, citing six sources familiar with the matter. The news agency reported that the US has assembled a target list of several more sanctioned tankers for possible seizure, and that the US Justice Department and Homeland Security has been planning the seizures for months. Further direct interventions by the US are expected in the coming weeks, Reuters added. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt effectively confirmed Reuters' reporting Thursday. "We're not going to stand by and watch sanctioned vessels sail the seas with black market oil, the proceeds of which will fuel narco-terrorism of rogue and illegitimate regimes around the world," Leavitt told reporters. She confirmed that the seized tanker is being brought to a US port, where authorities intend to confiscate its cargo of approximately 1.1 million barrels of Venezuelan crude oil worth roughly $78 million. In other words, the Trump administration is initiating a blockade of Venezuela, which is typically treated as an act of war under international law. The Venezuelan government issued a statement Wednesday. "Under these circumstances, the true reasons for the prolonged aggression against Venezuela have finally been exposed. It is not migration. It is not drug trafficking. It is not democracy. It is not human rights. It has always been about our natural resources, our oil, our energy, about the resources that belong exclusively to the Venezuelan people." The planned escalation of piracy against Venezuelan oil shipments takes place amid an unprecedented military build-up in the Caribbean and an ongoing series of massacres of civilians on boats in the Caribbean and Pacific. Since September, US forces have launched 22 drone and missile strikes against boats, killing at least 87 people. The administration has provided no public evidence to support its claim that the boats are involved in drug smuggling, and such evidence would not justify the strikes, even if true. The Pentagon has deployed more than 15,000 troops, a dozen warships, including the aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford, scores of aircraft, and thousands of personnel to the Caribbean Sea and Pacific Ocean. This represents the largest U.S. military mobilization in the Caribbean since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. According to an analysis published Wednesday by RAIN, formerly STRATFOR, the most likely scenario remains an escalation to U.S. airstrikes or special forces operations inside Venezuelan territory, as Washington tries to weaken Maduro and indirectly create the conditions for regime change in the long term. In an interview Tuesday, President Donald Trump refused to rule out sending ground troops, telling Politico that Maduro's days are numbered. He has warned that attacks could expand very soon from boats to targets inside the country. The US media is, meanwhile, openly discussing a pledge by the Trump administration to overthrow the Venezuelan government. The Wall Street Journal editorial board published a statement Thursday declaring that Trump is now obliged to follow through on his commitment to oust Maduro. The seizure signals that Mr. Trump isn't backing down on his effort to oust the dictator, the journal wrote approvingly. The editorial added, "Having committed the US to oust Mr. Maduro, Mr. Trump is obliged to follow through." The journal editorial also celebrated the transfer of Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado under US military protection to Norway to receive her Nobel Peace Prize, suggesting the CIA may have sources in the country that can help with a democratic restoration. Machado confirmed Thursday that "we had support from the United States government for her departure from Venezuela, where she had been in hiding for nearly a year." According to the journal, her network made an important call to the US military before they set out to sea, warning American forces in the region of the vessel's occupants to avoid the kind of airstrike that has hit more than 20 similar vessels in the past 3 months, killing more than 80 people. The coordination reveals the intimate relationship between Washington and the so-called opposition. Ricardo has outlined a $1.7 trillion privatization plan for Venezuela's economy and has repeatedly praised Trump's military buildup. "I believe that President Trump's actions have been decisive," she told reporters in Oslo Thursday. The tanker seizures and military threats must be understood in the context of the Trump administration's national security strategy, published December 4th. The 33-page document explicitly establishes a goal of restoring American preeminence in the Western Hemisphere, while denying non-hemispheric competitors, meaning China, the ability to position forces or other threatening capabilities, or to own or control strategically vital assets in the region. The strategy makes clear that the administration views Latin America as a captive supplier of resources for U.S. corporations to be blockaded from Chinese investment and trade at gunpoint. China currently purchases roughly 80% of Venezuela's oil exports, and the piracy campaign is aimed at severing this trade. Venezuela holds the world's largest proven oil reserves, more than 300 billion barrels, representing 17% of global reserves. The claim that Washington is intervening to combat drug smuggling is a transparent fraud. The seized ship was actually bound for Cuba, which is heavily dependent on Venezuela to fuel its economy. Trump has also threatened Colombian President Gustavo Petro, declaring that Petro is next, making clear that the campaign extends beyond Venezuela to any government in Latin America that fails to submit to Washington's dictates. Colombia is also a significant oil producer, although far less than Venezuela. A New York Times report Thursday underscored the criminal character of the boat strikes. According to the Times, the administration has repatriated survivors rather than bringing them to the U.S. to ensure survivors did not end up in the U.S. judicial system, where court cases could force the administration to show evidence. The survivors who have been rescued were returned to their home countries and never charged with any crime. The Democratic Party has offered no serious opposition to these war preparations. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, when asked Wednesday whether he opposes regime change in Venezuela, refused to state his opposition. "You know, obviously if Maduro would just flee on his own, everyone would like that," Schumer said. The bloodbath already unleashed with the boat strikes is just the beginning of what the Trump administration has planned for Latin America. Having declared its intention to overthrow the Venezuelan government, announced a blockade of the country's oil exports, and deployed the largest military force to the Caribbean since the Cuban Missile Crisis, the administration is threatening a broader war to reduce the entire hemisphere to a U.S. colony. European powers strive to prolong war in Ukraine. By Peter Schwartz. After 4 years of war, hundreds of thousands of soldiers killed and millions of refugees displaced, NATO's war against Russia has reached an impasse. Despite providing Ukraine with military logistics and 400 billion euro since the start of the conflict, NATO has failed to drive back Russian forces. They are advancing slowly, but steadily. The Ukrainian regime is collapsing under the weight of corruption scandals. President Zelensky was forced to dismiss his closest confidant, Andriy Yermak, and only 20% of the population would vote for him again. Several hundred soldiers are deserting the army each day. Despite brutal conscription methods, the Ukrainian military is unable to obtain the necessary cannon fodder for the front lines. The US now appears determined to withdraw from the war. Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, has negotiated a peace plan with Russia, over the heads of both the Ukrainian government and Washington's European allies, that combines the cession of Ukrainian territory with lucrative deals for American corporate interests. Trump's new national security strategy, released last week, no longer identifies Russia as an adversary, but instead attacks the European Union, the EU. It accuses European leaders of having unrealistic expectations of the war, welcomes the rise of far-right parties in Europe as a cause for great optimism, and calls for the breakup of the EU. On Monday, Trump reinforced this stance in a lengthy interview with Politico, where he denounced Europe as a decaying group of nations led by weak people who don't know what to do. "They talk, but they don't accomplish anything, and the war just goes on," he railed. The European powers, led by Germany, France and the UK, are responding by doing everything possible to prolong the bloodshed in Ukraine and block Trump's plans. They are not interested in peace, but the continuation of war. In recent days, there have been summit talks with Zelensky, phone calls to Trump, counter-proposals to his peace plan, and efforts to escalate military action. The European powers aim to achieve two goals in particular. They want to prevent Ukraine from permanently ceding territories to Russia they would not be able to reclaim later if the balance of power were to change. And they want so-called security guarantees for Ukraine. Even if the country renounces formal NATO membership, it is to be developed into a heavily armed NATO outpost that keeps the region in a permanent state of tension and can reignite the war at any time. French President Macron has long advocated for deploying French troops in Ukraine, and the British government has made similar pledges. Ukraine is also to be transformed into a hub of European arms production, and equipped with missiles capable of striking deep into Russia. The EU Commission and several member states have already earmarked enormous sums for this purpose. Moscow cannot accept such security guarantees after fighting a four-year war to prevent NATO from expanding further and gaining a foothold in Ukraine. The guarantees demanded by Europe are aimed at sabotaging an agreement and ensuring that the war continues, with the support, or at least acquiescence, of the US. However, it is unlikely that Washington will go along with Europe's manoeuvres. Political observers now assume that the alliance with the US is irretrievably broken, and that Europe will pursue its imperialist interests on its own in the future, and, if necessary, against the US. This weekend's print edition of Der Spiegel appears with the title, How Trump and Putin Are Attacking Europe. Two Rogues, One Goal. The cover story states, quote, "As long as the cameras are rolling, European leaders dutifully praise Trump's mediation efforts. But as soon as the leaders are among themselves, they make no secret of the fact that they do not see Trump and his people as allies, but as rivals, who have more sympathy for Vladimir Putin than for their former partners." The Spiegel concludes, "Europe will only be able to survive if it stands up to Russia and makes itself more independent from the US. The EU is not defenseless, even if it may appear that way at the moment. It just needs to be willing to use its power. It is home to more than 450 million people, and with a gross domestic product of 18 trillion euro, it is still the second strongest economic area behind the US. Europe has the money and technical know-how to build drones, tanks, and fighter jets. Trump can only humiliate Europe if Europe makes itself small." Unquote. This is a program of unrestrained militarism. For 4 years, official propaganda has justified military support for Ukraine with the lie that it is about defending democracy and Western values against an arbitrary war of aggression, even though NATO deliberately provoked the war by expanding eastward. But now that the war is at an impasse, the US is seeking an agreement with Moscow. Zelensky is turning out to be a corrupt oligarch, and resistance to the senseless bloodshed is growing among the Ukrainian and European populations. Der Spiegel identifies the real motive. Europe should build drones, tanks, and fighter jets so that it does not make itself small, i.e. so that it can act as a major military power in a world of imperialist conflicts. There are dozens of similar comments. The IPG Journal of the Social Democratic Party affiliated Friedrich Ebert Foundation states, quote, "The benevolent hegemon on the other side of the Atlantic is now becoming a world power that, like Russia, is attempting to weaken the EU and arrange the political conditions in Europe according to its own discretion. There is no sign of a compromise or middle ground." Unquote. In response, the IPG Journal calls for a European Rütli Oath, a reference to the supposed beginning of the old Swiss Confederacy's rebellion against the Habsburgs in the 14th century. It says there is a need for a forced reduction of Europe's security policy dependencies, the establishment of a European arms industry for central systems that enable Europe to act jointly, a strengthening of economic and political relations with other regions, and the consolidation of international institutions against influence from Washington. And Stefan Meister, of the German Council on Foreign Relations, DGAP, writes in Die Zeit, "Only a Europe capable of acting, which takes responsibility militarily, financially, and with regard to Ukraine's integration into the EU, can become a player in negotiations to end the war." Europe's insistence on security guarantees that are unacceptable to Russia, and its commitment to prolonging the war, not only deepens the suffering and destruction in Ukraine, but risks dragging all of Europe into a catastrophic conflict with nuclear-armed Russia. These policies are inseparable from attacks on the working class. In this fight against the rogue Trump, the European bourgeoisie is adopting his fascistic methods. The demand for a continent-wide rearmament for preparation for war with Russia was spelled out by NATO head Mark Rutte, a former Prime Minister of the Netherlands, in a speech in Germany on Thursday. He declared, "Conflict is at our door. Russia has brought war back to Europe, and we must be prepared for the scale of war our grandparents or great-grandparents endured. Imagine it, a conflict reaching every home, every workplace, destruction, mass mobilization, millions displaced, widespread suffering, and extreme losses." He claimed that if the major NATO powers in Europe rearmed to invest 5% of GDP annually in defence by 2035, military spending agreed by NATO, that this is a tragedy we can prevent. But as is clear with the attempts of the Europeans to stymie any peace deal with Russia over Ukraine, none of this is aimed at peace. Rather, Rutte's speech was summed up in his statement that NATO had to shift to a wartime mindset. "The planned increase in military spending to 5% of GDP over the coming years is already leading to massive attacks on pensions, healthcare, and social programs." In France, Macron's pension reforms sparked mass protests. He remains in office only thanks to the support of the Social Democrats. In Belgium, Portugal, and Italy, general strikes have erupted in response to austerity budgets. In Germany, disputes over pension reform, i.e. a major reduction in retirement benefits, are threatening the stability of the ruling coalition of the Christian Democratic Union, Christian Social Union, and SPD. But continuing the war without US support and integrating Ukraine into the EU will cost even more. Military aid to Ukraine has already fallen sharply this year because Europe has been unable to replace the missing payments from the US, which previously covered half of the costs. Ukraine's financial needs for the next 2 years are estimated at 136 billion euro. The EU wants to use the frozen Russian central bank assets held by Euroclear in Belgium to cover these costs. However, the Belgian government has so far strongly opposed this, fearing that it will be held liable for brazen theft that violates the principle of state immunity under international law. Added to this are the effects of the global trade war. Industrial production in Germany, the strongest EU member in economic terms, is in free fall. Between the summer of 2024 and the summer of 2025, 114,000 relatively well-paid jobs were lost there within a year, almost 10,000 every month. The European ruling class is preparing for a major escalation of class struggle. Like Trump, it is responding by stepping up persecution of migrants, building a police state, strengthening far-right parties, and persecuting political opposition. Militarism and democracy are incompatible. Workers must prepare for fierce class struggles, the defence of jobs, the fight against social spending cuts, and the struggle against war and militarism are inseparably linked. They require the development of an independent movement of the international working class to overthrow capitalism and build a socialist society. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.